Hey everybody, and happy new year. It's IndieQuest, the celebration of the Indian obscure, and this is our IndieQuest 2024 or 2023 awards going into 2024. So such a fun time of the year. I am one of your hosts here, Josh, also known as Frantic. I'm here with one of my co-hosts, Captain Drachma. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Celebrated the ringing in the new year last night with my family. And honestly, went to bed excited as I was when I was a wee babe for Christmas morning, knowing full well that we would be coming here today and talking about our Game of the Year choices. But we're also joined by Steve. How are you doing?
I'm good. I also rung in the new year last night. I didn't watch the ball drop or anything. I literally held up my phone, watched it count down the seconds, and then when it got to 3 seconds away from midnight, my screen went dark, so I missed the actual cut over to midnight, but I'd like to think I said Happy New Year in the approximate area of where I should have.
So it is hilarious that you mentioned that, because something very, honestly worse, but also similar to that happened to us. I don't know how you guys watch your TV, or if you have streaming services or cable or whatever, satellite at your house. But we, for the longest time, always had cable. We have Spectrum. But recently, it's like, okay, this is ridiculous, right? It's so expensive. So we switched to streaming from that cable provider. So it's all through Wi-Fi now. And we were watching it last night and realized it seems like the popular programs, football games and things like that, seem to make it buffer more. I don't know if that's the case. But it was buffering like crazy when we were watching, trying to watch the ball drop last night. And as it was counting down from like 20 or whatever, I happened to just look at my phone and it's already midnight. And so I tell my wife, I'm like, I'm not trying to ruin this for you, but it is already 12. Like, we're counting down for nothing. And the boys were like, ah, dang it. Like, it was just funny.
Our tradition now is to watch the Seattle news, and they have the Space Needle and everything, because of course I'm in the PNW. The thing about those the simulcasts or whatever they have, it's just always really bad. Like, and it's like a good type of bad though, like, yeah, you know, the evening news type bad,
corny, yeah.
And very corny jokes, like a guy saying like just obviously doesn't want to be there at midnight working. Yeah, you know, just that vibe, right. So yeah, they had like a MC. Well, who was it? MC Hammer there one year, and yeah, it was something else. But anyway, it's kind of been our tradition.
So. I had a bunch of people, East Coasters, messaging me, and they're like, "Happy New Year!" And I'm like, "I'll get back to you. I got to leave you on red for an hour because it's just still, you know, Sunday for me."
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. And also, it wasn't MC Hammer. It was Sir Mix-a-Lot.
But, oh, you know, even
one
better.
One of those guys. Yes, yes. So anyway. So this is our Game of the Year episode. Probably one of the biggest years of gaming, maybe like ever. Like up there, right? Like, it's been pretty crazy.
Yeah. It's, indie and AAA, I think it's been a pretty... No one out there played everything. I think everybody this year has a few games that they were like, damn, I wish I had time to get around to that, which makes the Game of the Year time interesting, because you kind of get a different mix of games from folks, and everyone kind of has their apologies to accompany it. It's a good time. I gotta say, though, before we get into any of our like festivities here, it's probably worth us quickly reintroducing the show, because I don't know about you guys, but when I'm like vibe checking a podcast, I go to their Game of the Year episode. So I feel like the Game of the Year episode tends to be a pretty popular one, and we'll have some new folks listening, you know, some new indie heads out there looking to hear what the game of the year is. And so, yeah, welcome on in, everyone. As we say at the top of every show, it's a celebration of the indie and obscure. It's a podcast that's really just focused on us shedding a little bit of light and appreciating indie games that maybe don't get as much coverage or as much airtime as some of the other more popular stuff. We have, you know, within that, I think we tend to have a pretty good mix of like triple I popular indies that get a lot of headlines. And also we get into the depths too. We're playing, you know, stuff on Itch and in Dreams and all sorts of stuff that you maybe haven't heard of. anywhere else. So our whole focus is just to share our experience with those. We kind of conclude our thoughts on every single one of our games by putting them either onto the main quest or the side quest of this larger ledger that we call the quest log. But at the end of the day, if we're bringing it to the show, we like it. That's just a little bit of a way for us to thumb the scales one direction or the other. It's the difference between me saying, damn, bro, you have to play this game, and me saying, damn, bro, I think you might like this game. Like, it's right. It's really the same difference. But yeah, hey, welcome on in. I don't know if you guys have anything else you want to add.
No, it's pretty much what I like to imagine. It is literally the cover art. We're just chilling around a fire, just chit-chatting about our favorite games, you know, just having doofy looks on our face and all that stuff. So, yeah.
For sure. Heck yeah. Well, we have a whole bunch of, like, subcategories that we're going to go through here. As we always do, we will talk through all these different things, you know, soundtrack, art direction, things like that. All of us have our own individual indie games of the year that we'll be sharing. And then we like to conclude things with coming to some sort of consensus where we can of what the show's game of the year is going to be. And so I think with that, what do you say? Do you guys want to just dig right into category number one?
Sounds awesome. Let's do it.
All right. Our first one here is the indiest indie game of 2023. What does that mean, you ask, dear listener? It's whatever you want it to mean, okay? It's an open-ended interpretation. You can, however you want to take those five words, well, four words, one number, it's up to you. So, Frantic, why don't you give me yours first?
Okay, so to me, when I think of this subject, I think of what is, like, the game that kind of, like, started from just word of mouth and became kind of big and maybe like a cult hit. That's kind of how I'm taking it as.
Yeah.
And the game I picked for this was El Paso Elsewhere. So the reason I picked this is the main creator is just out there a lot talking and interviewing. He is very transparent with his, it's Olivier Nelson. And he just pretty much just talks all about the process of the game and everything. And the game is made by a small team, obviously. He made the soundtrack, which was like a rap soundtrack that he rapped on, and he did the voice acting. And yeah, he's like the creative head, and I just feel like his voice and his personality shines through the game. So to me, that makes it my pick for indiest indie game.
That makes sense. And I feel like that developer's been out there putting stuff out for a while. Like, they've got a pretty consistent output, and I feel like this is the most that they've ever popped off. Like, this, they finally caught a little bit of a tailwind.
Yeah, it's like, just seems like they're almost like their coming out party, really, for like, this game is like super, like, hell yeah, this, you got to play this, everybody play this, this is a really fun game. I did put it on the side quest. To me, there was some things that, you know, didn't like sit with me to make it a main quest, but honestly, this game could be a main quest for a lot of people, because I know there are people itching for like a Max Payne style game. And like I said, made by a small crew, and just kind of popped off for them this year, which is awesome.
Yeah.
I think being that we are who we are and are always researching indie stuff, or at least me personally, I saw a lot of like random indie lists pop up on my phone, notifications like, oh, check out this person's top 10 from this random website. And I saw El Paso Elsewhere on several of them. So I think it's, you know, it's been recognized now at least, which is good.
Yeah, it's pretty much, this is where it fit the best for me. And I wanted just to give that game a shout out, because I thought it was pretty badass. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I'll go next, if that's okay with you, Steve.
Yeah.
All right. So I think we kind of came up with this topic last year. And the way I think of indiest indie game is either very new studio or small, or maybe it came out in a weird way. I did Demon Throttle last year, which came out only physically, which is so strange for any game ever. And only indie games would do that, right? It's because they're not as worried about the money as they are like getting their property out there and being different in a lot of ways.
Yep.
So I had a couple that I had in contention for this one. I'll mention a couple before I actually get my actual Indias indie game. Postmouse. I don't know if you guys remember Postmouse.
Oh,
played
yeah.
it at the very yeah. beginning of the year. Developed by some college kids in Europe. And it's just like a love letter to... Like, they made it for a class, but they, you could tell they put their love in it. It's jank. It lasts an hour. But it's there's a lot of love in it, and there's a lot of care that went into it. And that's what makes it fun and cool, and I think it's worth checking out.
Yeah.
Another one that's a lot more polished, but I didn't hear enough about, and I'm glad I brought it so that it could be more recognized by the general public, and that's Smushy Come Home.
Nice.
It is polished. It is nice. A lot less janky than a Postmouse. But is this, you know, fairly short 3D platformer that you can play in a sitting that I don't think enough people have heard about? So those are my two, I guess, honorable mentions for this. But my Indias indie game for 2023, and maybe this will be not surprising to the listeners or to my two co-hosts, but it will be Bloody Hell.
Yeah, solid pick.
Yep.
Bloody Hell is a completely free indie game, and it has no right to be free. It should be. I've said it over and over. They should charge $5 bare minimum for that game with how good it is. But that's the biggest reason it's my Indias indie game. It's a free game on Steam that anybody can go check out right now. And I think initially the way indies came out was kind of like that. People would hack existing games, just release them on the internet, and that's how indies started. And that is Bloody Hell. Unfortunately, you can buy the soundtrack for Bloody Hell and at least give the developers some money. And I suggest everyone do that, especially anybody that's played it and enjoyed it. But that's why Bloody Hell is my Indias indie game of 2023.
I never understand. Like, okay, I get it. It could just be a product of passion or, you know, many other reasons. But I'm always like, when you make such a solid game, you can ask a little money for it. It's okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
We're all operating within the system we find ourselves in. Make some money so that I know you're going to make another game in the future.
Right. And maybe it is that, hey, let's dip our toe in, release it for free, see what kind of flowers we get for it. And they've gotten a lot of reviews. And now they have this confidence that they can make and produce and make it actually cost something in the future. Whereas like some people are like, oh, how much is this game really worth? I feel like that's probably hard to really value the time spent on that game and the actual stuff that's within the game and then say, okay, is it a $7 game? Is it a $10 game? So I kind of understand where they were coming from, making it free, seeing how people were interested, and now they can make a Bloody Hell 2 or whatever kind of follow-up or something else, and people will be like, all right, I'm in on it. So
I guess they probably have this with like the soundtrack bundle, but I wonder if there's a way on Steam to like make your game free, but then have like a digital deluxe version that is $5. So it's like can opt in and pay $5 if you want
for
to,
sure.
But you don't have to.
Was that the game that had the soundtrack for like donations? Was that Bloody Hell?
Yeah.
Or is it?
Yeah.
Okay. It was
Bloody
that.
Hell. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like $4.50 or something, which is what the game should have cost.
Yeah.
And
right.
you can have the sound. It's only like 5 or 6 songs, but you got the soundtrack and yeah. So
you awesome. Start, you kick them a little money, just to be like, here you right. go. So that at least they had that option there. So
for sure.
Good stuff.
All right, Steve.
All right. When I think of Indiest Indie, so we often have a lot of fun on the show debating, you know, what counts as an indie, you know, Shantae an indie or not, yes or no. But there's other stuff too that is, you know, I would say that no one out there has a firm definition of what indie is. It's blurry because sometimes a relatively large publisher will have like a spin-off, an arm of its company that operates like an indie studio. Sometimes a game will be developed independently by a small team, and then last minute, a big publisher will come in and help get them over the finish line. So it's like, okay, do you punish them for just getting a publisher? Yeah. But when I think of Indiest Indie, I'm like, this is a game that none of us could have any objection to it being indie, right? Like operating in that model, right. Like this is super clear that this is something that is indie. And so I think folks that listened to the last couple episodes maybe won't be surprised for me, but my Indiest Indie is going to be Birth. So this is,
oh, nice.
A game developed by one person, Madison Carr, and they have developed several other games with a very similar art style. So it's very much like, this person, she has a passion for either maybe it's art first, whatever it is, but like I like making this type of product. I put it out. I hope some people enjoy it. None of them are, unfortunately, particularly popular. I can't imagine that they sell, you know, gobs and gobs of copies, but it's either for them not so much about how much it makes, or maybe, you know, they're operating lean and it makes just enough for them to produce another one. But it's like, you can tell when you play it, you really get one person's vision. You get like the passion of one individual, which is like the spirit of indie when I think of what it is. Yes, it's not what it always, not what it always is, but it's sort of like, that's the seed that other indie stuff grows out of in my mind. So yeah, it's just it's a really good game, and any opportunity I can have, you know, any chance to nudge people towards it, I'm here to do. Go play it on Steam. In fact, it's 30% off right now, I think.
Yeah. Birth is a great choice because it's just the right amount of genre splicing that can only happen in the indie space, unless some AAA studio would really want to take a leap on potentially making nothing and spending a lot of man hours. Birth is perfect.
True, yeah. You think, you know, stuff like you mentioned, like you can take a smooshy come home and you can pump enough millions of dollars into that, and on a timeline, it becomes a Mario Odyssey, you know? But you pump millions of dollars into Birth, you just... you just wasted a couple million dollars. Like, you don't, there's no end goal there. It doesn't result in anything else.
You made the fun sound effects sound funner. More like a jar opening.
You added loot boxes and sold some sick skins for your character.
Oh, who doesn't want to be Goku in Birth, you know?
Peter Griffin. Yeah, exactly.
Seriously.
Exactly.
So there you are. There's three of the indiest dang indie games that came out in 2023. I'd say we did pretty good there. All right, who wants to take us into our next one?
I will. Number two here is our best older indie game you played for the first time in 2023, which at first it was just best indie game you played for the first time in 2023. We're like, no, it's games released before this release year of 2023. So 2022 and earlier.
Yes.
So how about we have the captain go first? What is your game that you played that you loved that was a little bit older?
There were so many that I could have chosen for this year that I played. I did focus a lot on 2023 this year, specifically for this episode. But we had some second opinions in there. And of course, at the beginning of the year, it's really hard to play games that came out this year, right? Because there's just nothing that has come out yet. So it was tough. I played Undertale this year. I played Downwell this year. Mm. I played... Imposter Factory this year. We all did, right? Yep. All so excellent games. So it really came down for me to actually Downwell. I know I put Downwell on the side quests, but it is a roguelite that is absolutely my type of thing, a shooter roguelite where you're falling down a well. Talked about it at length on here. Great game. Everyone should go check it out, especially if you see it on a sale for like a couple bucks. It's tough. Yeah. But it's got this visual style and just this feeling behind it that I think is very special. So if you're into that type of game, go check it out. But
yeah,
my actual game from released from a previous year that I'm picking for this year is Haiku the Robot.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, nice.
Haiku the Robot came out, I think, in 2021 or 2020, if I'm remembering correctly. It's basically a Hollow Knight-like. It is very much like Hollow Knight, coming down to the different buffs you can get to for your character, how your sword swings, how your movement is, the different side abilities you can get is very, very much like the vessel in Hollow Knight, but just with a different coat of paint, more of a GBA art style. Most areas have a dominant color, but I loved, like, I went into that game thinking that this was going to be a subpar Hollow Knight, and I came out with a shorter, sweeter, definitely stands on its own Hollow Knight, like in Haiku the Robot. And I suggest anybody who hasn't checked it out that enjoys Metroidvanias and especially enjoys Hollow Knight should check out that game.
I gotta stop sleeping on this one, man. I wanted to play it when you brought it to the show, and then now you're talking about it again, and I want to play it again. It's like, I got to just get around to this dang thing.
And it was tough. I mean, I mentioned the other games. I really enjoyed Downwell and Imposter Factory. And honestly, I had to look back at my list, and I kind of looked through everything. I'm like, I got to talk about Haiku the Robot. It was such a good experience, because I went into it thinking it's going to be okay, and it ends up blowing me away, more or less. And then I got some confirmation from people in the Discord, like Pam, who also played it, who loved it. And if Pam loves it, a Metroidvania, then you know it's pretty dang good, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. Shout out for Haiku the Robot.
Nice. Good one. All right. I can take it away here then. It was also, I mean, this is probably the hardest category, maybe, because it's just so wide. Other than Drachma this year, I would say generally most things we bring to the show are not modern games relevant to that current year. I mean, we mix them in, certainly, but just by volume, there's so many indies that have come and gone that we missed that I think we tend to bring more that aren't. So I had a couple that were very close. In another world, another day, you ask me tomorrow, you know, this might have been my winner instead of what I picked. One is Patrick's Parabox, which is actually very relevant in a year when Cocoon came out, because it's a very similar idea, but it did it first, of recursive block-pushing puzzling. But, like, Cocoon is, like, you know, worlds within worlds, the vibe. And Patrick's Parabox is worlds within worlds, the code, the mechanic. It's, like, it is so – it gets so intense by the end. Like, the difficulty difference between the beginning of that game and the end of that game is wild. In a good way. Like, it's just like a puzzle game so genius that you wonder how one person could have possibly come up with it. It reminds me a lot of Baba Is You in that way. So, it could have been Patrick's Parabox. Could have also been Point P, which was a mobile game that I played not recently, which is, it's funny because you mentioned Downwell. Point P is from the same developer. And,
oh, really? Cool.
And it's basically Upwell. It's what if you're going up instead of down, and it's like fruit instead of gun boots.
Yeah.
So it's really good. It's also like, just like Downwell, it's got that really addictive loop where runs are pretty short, like upgrades are pretty satisfying. And then it's like, you always just feel like you have time for one more. You're like, all right, I just got to hop back. That was a dumb mistake. That was on me. Obviously, I shouldn't have done that, but my brain made a dumb decision. I'm going to get back in there and do it again. Point P is the exact same way. And just like Downwell 2, when you get towards the end of that game and you get pretty good at it, you feel like a god. You're like, I am the coolest person that's ever lived. I'm so good at this game.
And it's like that. That's what I love so much about Downwell, is because, like, when you get really good, you're like, floor? Yeah. What is a floor? I don't need a floor. I will fall.
It's the exact same way where in Point P you start lining up these like crazy combos. You're like a master pinball player. But
sweet.
So those are my runner-ups, but I have to give the winner to my boy Inscription.
Oh yeah.
There's no game that I played this year that made me feel so strongly the "you idiot, why didn't you play this in the year it came out? What the hell were you doing?" And now we got that Pony Island 2 announcement, so I'm so freaking hyped up. But yeah, this I've had this game, like, I say this a lot, but like, this was a very much like a break glass in case of emergency. I've had it sitting there waiting, knowing that I'd be into it. I know it's my vibe. I love card games, and I like a good just kind of like weird horror, and I love, like, without giving any of the details away, I love a good meta narrative. I love more than meets the eye. I love a good Transformers game, as they say.
Yes.
And so when I played Inscription, Rare is the game where I kind of like, I didn't know what to expect, but I knew to expect. And even having sort of like that knowledge going in, still I was like, that was way better than I thought it was going to be. Holy crap. And so, yeah, big swing and a miss for me, you know, 2 years ago or whenever it came out, I think 2021.
Yeah. Maybe.
But yeah, Inscription, the big winner for sure.
It's sitting in my Steam library now, buddy. I bought it.
Yeah.
It's a Devolver Digital game, man. All right. You got to play it eventually. You got no choice. Yes.
That's on my 2024 games to play. Like, for real. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yep.
When you do, hey, awesome. Sounds like we need to pencil us in a second opinion episode. All right.
Okay.
Help you guys out. Sounds good.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I would love for that to come, because I think our last one, it was just me and Josh going back and forth. So,
yeah.
Got to get Steve back in on a mm-hmm. second opinion sooner rather than later.
Heck cool. Yeah.
Awesome. So, I thought about this a little bit, and there's only one game that spoke to me this year, and that was Marvel Snap. No, I'm just kidding.
I was like, hey.
Hey, he jokes, but like, this guy's holding down the fort in the Marvel Snap thread in our Discord, all right? Straight up, it's just him, and he'll still post updates to the game, which that's a man of dedication.
It's just my crack. Like, I love that game. But anyway, the game that first popped into my head was actually Superliminal. This is one of my honorable mentions here, or at least maybe my main one. I think that is one of the strongest first-person puzzle game I've played in many, many years. So that one, like, I actually like that one a little more than Viewfinder, which I did play since the last episode here, or a couple episodes ago. But I played it recently. I just like that game. I thought it was really intelligent and had a lot of really cool trickery things. Like, it had the best thing where the way it plays with its perspective, where you're like, well, I think I can do that. And then when you can do that, it's just like the best feeling ever. So that's pretty much that game in a nutshell.
Nice.
But the game I'm actually going to be picking today is, it's pretty obvious. It's a second opinion game. It's Death's Door. I absolutely love Death's Door. I think this is one of the best top-down action games maybe I've ever played. I know that's overhyped maybe, but I love the mood, the atmosphere, the gameplay, the combat, everything is just excellent. I'm sorry, it's just so good. Steve's over here shaking his head, but
it's the best one I've ever played. If you ask me, it's the best ever, it's the best game ever. Mm. But I will mention, I appreciate you so much, Josh, for bringing that, because now Death's Door has made it into this category 2 years running. Because I brought it last year.
You did, yeah, you did. Yeah. And it's pretty much, it's one of my favorite indie games. Like, it's awesome. I'm glad I played it, just to be honest. So
I'm gonna bring it in our second opinion. I'm gonna go in with a terrible attitude, arms crossed, over like, stupid game.
Stupid game, but you know, it's kind of good, but stupid.
Yeah, yeah, I would never admit that. No, that's awesome. I'm glad that you liked it. Now I at least have one person who I like that enjoys Death's Door. So.
Honestly, Steve, I would love for you to go into Death's Door wanting to nitpick it, because I would love to hear, like, because, you know, we've compared it so much to a game you love in Tunic.
Yeah.
And I also love Tunic. I joke, but I love it too. So I would love for somebody to go into it and play it with, like, trying to pick it apart, you know?
Yeah.
Instead of just like, oh, this is a really good game. I bet I'm going to have fun with this, you know? So I would like that opinion of it at some point, so.
It is the only game installed on my PlayStation 5 that I have not yet played. Usually I install the game and then I play it right away. It's the only one that I installed so that on a moment of weakness, a moment of impulse, someday I will start it.
And that day, I will be a happy, happy camper on that day. Oh. All right. I will introduce the next category then. One of my personal favorites. I think one of all of our personal favorites.
Yeah.
The best indie game soundtrack of 2023. And we were talking before the show about having honorable mentions or talking about games that, you know, could be mixed with the game that actually won this category for you. This is probably the category that I have the most games that could have topped the list. It's just a banger year.
This category, much harder for me than Game of the Year itself. I
seriously,
I toiled over this one so much longer. Like, I don't know, man. It's so freaking hard. There's so many, like, every game that came out this year had good ass soundtracks. I don't know what was going on. What was in the freaking water 2 years ago when they started developing them? But it was just, this was ridiculous.
And so varied. Good. That's the hard part, is it's hard to pick one that I like the most when they were all so good and so different from each other.
Yep.
Like everything was, it was like, oh, I like this because of this reason, but I also like this because of this reason. But how do I pick between my children on this one. That was pretty much, yeah. Was so hard. But fortunately, I'm the one talking about this category at the beginning, so I'm not going to have to reveal mine until the end.
That's
Steve,
true.
You get to struggle with it first.
The unofficial rule set that we established 20 minutes ago, seriously. Coming back to bite me. All right.
We didn't even know at the time. But yeah.
We weren't even discussing. It just happened that way. All right. I'm going to limit myself to three honorable mentions because I have a feeling you guys will either have your own honorable mentions that I agree with or your winners that I agree with. So first one, honorable mention, I think maybe the most obvious honorable mention of them is Sea of Stars. Just a ridiculous over-the-top soundtrack. I would be surprised if we get through this category without one of the three of us making it their choice. So I won't maybe belabor it too much, but like if you're into high-energy, like bombastic chiptune, it's so freaking good. If you like the music from The Messenger, it's just as good. There's like remixes of songs from that game. It's incredible. Phenomenal, phenomenal music. It sat in my winner spot for a long time, and then I bumped it out because I admitted to myself, even though I want to say I like Sea of Stars the most, there is another soundtrack that I listened to outside of the game way more. And I was like, that's probably a pretty compelling argument. But before I get to that one, another honorable mention that I need to give is to Planet of Lana. Ridiculously cool soundtrack there. That game, more than any other game, is scored like it's a movie. It's like a John Williams score or something. The songs not only are like catchy or atmospheric or like very good at matching the tone of the scene, but a lot of times the songs feel like they're kind of like telling a little story. Like you can close your eyes as the song is playing and imagine the character like moving along the scene and doing something right in time to the music, even though the game isn't literally lined up to the music in that way. It's just so, it just feels very emotive in its soundtrack. So I was really surprised when I played Planet Alana. And then last one is Chia, a very refreshing soundtrack and one that I haven't really heard anything else like it much in the past, probably because it is based on music from and instruments from New Caledonia, which I'm not particularly familiar with or wasn't until now. But yeah, music is a big core focus of that game. I mean, it's got multiple dance numbers, multiple music playing sections, and then the overworld soundtrack is also just really freaking good. But I'm giving my soundtrack of the year to Jusant. So freaking good. I think there's a tendency for this type of game, for a Jusant, to try to emulate the like sweeping score of Journey, because it's very much a game developed by people that were inspired by Journey 10 years ago. But Jusant instead breaks off and does its own thing, where it uses a lot of these like kind of very melancholy, chill, sort of like almost like downer, but more like just sort of mellow piano riffs and tunes. They weave a lot of the themes like through multiple songs throughout the game, and it's the most relaxing soundtrack to me. It's also the one, and this is like my personal heartstring pull, is for whatever reason this became the soundtrack that I put on every night when I'm giving my kid a bath. And so he's become used to the soundtrack, and it's become like a little bit of a ritual for us to listen to it. Mm-hmm. We've done that a couple times with Chia too, but I've gone back and I've listened to the Jusant soundtrack dozens and dozens of times at this point outside the game, and hell yeah, it's really freaking good.
And I must mention, I don't think you've talked about Jusant directly on IQ, but you have talked about it a little bit on Polykill, I think, and streaming, I think, but you had an issue, right, with Jusant where you had to redo a section of the game. I suppose it was a good thing the OST was good for that, right? you have to hear all the same stuff over again. So that had to have been, you know, it would be a little grating if it wasn't good, I guess. So
right.
Yes. Speaks volumes.
Yeah, very much. Yeah. New to IndieQuest only listeners. I had an issue with Jusant where my save file borked and I lost like an hour and a half, 2 hours of progress. I think it was actually the Xbox borked, not Jusant. Jusant's a perfect video game. But yeah, I was happy to hop right back in and just do it again. And yeah, soundtrack was a big part of that. There's pretty different and varied environments in the game, and the soundtrack changes to match each of those. And I was like, I'll listen to some more of that. Heck yeah, let's go.
Yes.
So good game.
Awesome. Yeah, cool. That one's on my backlog for sure. I have it downloaded on Game Pass. You know how it is. You download every Game Pass game that comes out, and then you get to it when you get to it.
Yeah, I still got Somerville just sitting there waiting for me to get around to it. It's been like 2 years.
One day. Yeah. All right. Well, this one was a little tough for me too. The one that kept coming to my head, this is one of my honorable mentions, is Space for the Unbound. I think that the music in it just added to the emotion of the game. We're probably going to be talking about this game a little bit more later anyway. Just a heads up. But I just thought that it was just a really well done game from top to bottom. And the music has one of the most catchy like town themes maybe I've heard in many years. And it just like gets stuck in your head. It's an earworm. It's beautiful. And then every time there's an emotional moment, there's just the perfect song to match that emotional moment. And just an incredible soundtrack. But there's no denying it. My favorite soundtrack of the year. This is actually, I actually don't listen to too much game music, but this is something I drive to, which is a good sign, is the Sea of Stars soundtrack. It's just my favorite of the year. I just find it really addicting to listen to. All the stuff that Steve was talking about, it's just they really nailed that era, and then they added a little bit more flair to it, and it's just so damn good. And every time I listen to it, I get emotional. I think about the story and I think about the adventure. When I'm driving doing my job, I feel like I'm on an adventure in the woods, you know, just because it's just so damn good. So that is my favorite one of the year.
Yeah, it's good, man. It's just like the Shovel Knight soundtrack, where it is reminding you of the music from the past, but somehow it's like it's more full bodied chiptune in an interesting way.
Yeah. It makes you feel like chills. When I turn on the soundtrack, there's a couple songs on there. I like get chills. Cause it's it just gets that emotion out of you. So good.
Yeah. I was putting together my YouTube video for my top 10 games of the year. Spoiler, Sea of Stars was on there, and I was going and I was pulling music from the games to like put behind each of the discussions. And I ended up listening to Sea of Stars soundtrack like almost all the way through, because I was like, should I do this song? Should I do this song? I don't know.
Seriously.
Exactly.
I'm pumped to know what Drachma's is. You guys, this doesn't play during audio, but Drachma has the best freaking poker face I've ever seen in my life. Like, four games have gotten mentioned, and every time he gives this coy little, like, good pick, where I'm like, that's the one. He's playing it down because that was his pick. But it's like, I honestly have no idea what it actually is going to be, because he does it for all of them.
It's hilarious because you guys have mentioned, both of you have mentioned games that I also played this year. And I'm like, you know, he's kind of right. Should I change this on the fly? Should I cross my, like, I am so on the fence in between. But I think I'm going to have to stick with what I originally chose. So my honorable mentions, I'm not going to pour over them because I've got several, and I just want to mention A Space for the Unbound. Nice. Incredible. Josh already mentioned it. So good. Honestly, perhaps of all soundtracks that came out this year, I've listened to A Space for the Unbound the most. So what does that tell you? It probably could have been my number one. It is just that good. There are certain songs in there that I could listen to over and over again, especially some of the Dream Space Dive sequence songs are just really good. Smushy Come Home. Mentioned it when I brought it here. I've listened to that soundtrack several times. Just the most relaxing, happy, shiny soundtrack. It's hard to explain it, because everything you listen to in that game, or everything you listen to while I'm out like working, it reminds me of moments in that game, and it all makes me smile because that game is just happiness embodied into a video game.
Nice.
Planet of Lana, for everything Steve said, incredible. Yep. Listen to it a million times outside of the game as well while I'm working. The thing that I would probably detract for that is it's shorter than you want it to be, and I guess the game is short too. Yeah. But the soundtrack is like less than an hour, and I wish sometimes that it was Sea of Stars length soundtrack, 7 hours. Like, I could take more. Just give me more of that music. It's just so good.
Yeah. Planet Lana also does have a couple songs on the soundtrack. They fit perfectly in the game, but they does have a couple songs on the soundtrack that are just like stressful noise. So if you're listening to the whole album, you get to that and you're like, I'm just going to skip this because it's just, it's making me sweat.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. That's true. Especially sections with certain robots, right?
Where
it works so well, gets your heart rate up, but it's like, I'm working right now. Chill.
Yeah.
OST.
Yeah, definitely.
Meg's Monster. Incredible. Mm. Incredible soundtrack. Mm. Beginning to end. Fits the game very well. And only recently brought it to IQ, and unfortunately the soundtrack itself is not on YouTube and is not easy to listen to. So that's detracted a little bit for me. I wish I could have listened to it more outside of the game, but it's incredible for the gameplay. And then Cassette Beast, the one soundtrack that I brought, or that I'm bringing today, and the one game that I brought that actually had vocals associated with majority of songs. Very, very good. Shelby Harvey, I believe, is the singer. Amazing. And then all the songs just constructed so well. Incredible game, incredible soundtrack. Finally, we have arrived at what I will call my best soundtrack of the year. I clearly omitted a specific game, so it's probably pretty easy. Sea of Stars is my OST for this year. Everything Josh said, everything Steve has mentioned, it's like, what if a game came out in 1995 and had a soundtrack that you would think of for the 2020s? Like, that is
That's a good way to put it.
There are songs in there. I was recently listening to it, and there are just a few songs in there where I'm just like, just bopping, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're just like, this is so good. And it's just so varied from beginning to end. There are songs that make you feel certain things with what you felt like in the game. There's upbeat, energetic songs. The battle theme. I could listen to the battle theme forever. Yeah.
It's so the best important battle theme. To have a battle theme that you can listen to throughout the whole game, right? Because it's the song you're going to hear the most. I still go willingly listen to that battle theme sometimes because it's so freaking good.
It just gets you so hyped.
It does.
I can hear it in my head right now just thinking of it.
Yep.
And almost the tipping of the scales for me over A Space for the Unbound probably was that half of the songs in Sea of Stars have a day and night version.
True.
And they both are awesome. It's unfair almost to the other games. There's just so many songs, and it's like 10 hours of music.
There's just so much care and dedication. Yeah. You can tell that was one of the things that game's just really highly polished and produced anyway. So that's just one of those levels of, let's make sure the soundtrack's a banger. And I think it's an all-timer for sure.
Yeah. And Mitsuda. Mitsuda worked on it, obviously, which is also unfair. So
definitely.
Very true. Dude, good music this year, huh? Let's say thank you to all the soundtracks. We heart all of you.
Yeah, we do.
But let's move in. I'm up next, right? Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm taking it. Next up, we got Best Art Direction of 2023. Now, we label the category Best Art Direction, but I think it's basically like, what's the prettiest game? What did you like looking at the most? It doesn't necessarily have to be like a unique art style or something. Although if that's where you wanted to take the category, I wouldn't blame you either. So who wants to take this one for us?
I think this
automatically goes to Josh if we're doing our circle thing.
We have an unofficial cycle. Okay, yeah. I shouldn't break habit at this point.
Yeah. All right. There are a lot of beautiful games this year. I had just played this game. I'm not going to do any honorable mentions. I'm just going to go right out and say what mine is. It is Planet of Lana for me. That is my favorite art style of the year. I just thought everything was gorgeous. It's literally a painting in motion. And it might be, I don't think this is recency bias. I was like looking through all the old games, the games I played this year, and this game really just, there's moments where they will zoom out this 2D format and it's just jaw-dropping art, that you would hang on your wall, and then you just go to the next screen, same thing, jaw-dropping art that moves and is beautiful, and the music's swelling, and they just do such a good job with the presentation. Like, it's a really fun game too. It's a really nice puzzle platformer. I don't know if you brought it to the show, so we've talked about it in depth before, but it's just a stunning game. I just think it's one of my favorite art styles of the year. There's just so much, like, this is so hard to do because all the games look so different. So yes, it's like, it's this one is my favorite 2D pixel art maybe, or this one's my favorite 3D, but this one overall I would say is my favorite.
Yeah, I mean, it's a moving painting.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's incredible. Like, it makes sense that it's possible because it's basically a 2D game. There's like 3D play there, but for the most part, you're playing on a 2D plane, right? So yes, it's possible to have this happen, but it is almost like playing a cartoon a la Cuphead or something like that. It's very weird.
What I was thinking of for it is like, this is Studio Ghibli's Cuphead. You know what I mean? This is kind of like, gives it that Ghibli vibe the whole time. So I loved it.
Yeah. I love a game with a good bright blue sky. Give me that blue sky energy. Yeah. Planet Alana delivers.
Because then when the blue sky goes away, you know things are happening.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, like it's going down.
That game has some good tension moments. I actually really enjoyed the game. I just played it recently, like I said. But yeah. Anyway. Who's next?
Me. I will go. All right.
Okay.
Best art. I do have a couple honorable mentions. For the sprite-based games, I'm going to have to go with Sea of Stars and A Space for the Unbound. Both of them look incredible. Sea of Stars is just a marvel. I mean, absolutely incredible to look at and could be the best art for so many people. I'm sure it is. The blues, just the colors, and that's the thing that gets you with with Sea of Stars is on the old systems where a Sea of Stars like game like Chrono Trigger or something would have played, they were not able to put this many colors on screen.
Yep.
And that's where Sea of Stars just cheats its ass off. You know, like it's like, yeah, no, we're doing that. But no, if when you're walking around the overworld, it's like, what? This is crazy. Like the amount of colors everywhere. It's like hard for your eyes to take. Right.
Yep.
But in a good way. A Space for the Unbound, same thing. There are certain sections. It is still sprite-based. It's, you know, still that blockiness going on, but just the colors everywhere and the sky, the gradient of especially when like looking out at a sunset. It's insane.
Game has a really good way of expressing the environment. Does that make sense? Like every little thing has its own character to it. It's beautiful.
For sure.
And sprite animation. What the characters' faces make when things are happening and wind blowing characters' hair. It's just really good. And then last of my honorable mentions is Dordogne. And that's because it is a watercolor art style that you're playing a watercolor painting. It's amazing. I love it. The game itself is good. It's a good game, but it is incredible to look at and well worth a play only for what it looks like alone, right?
Nice.
But my best art style, which I talked about when I brought it here, and Josh already mentioned it, Planet of Lana, is my favorite. And I don't really have a whole lot to add other than what Josh already said. We kind of already talked about it. It's a moving...
We're just agreeing here. We're syncing
cartoon
up, you know?
Picture. Yes. Yes, absolutely. It's incredible. And it's something that I could go back to and look at over and over again. The reason it made Main Quest for me, and I think I explained as much back then, was not so much the gameplay. Gameplay is fun, but it looks so good and sounds so good that it's something that should be experienced by everyone, in my opinion. And those are the reasons why.
So
that's my game with the best art direction, art style for 2023.
You know, last thought on Lana, it's interesting. You know, I'll hop into mine then. Lana is an honorable mention for me. I'm continuing the trend of ruining your perfect streak. but what's interesting in Planet Lana is that, you know, it's a game that owes a lot to Limbo as like the early example of this sort of 2D puzzle platformer. And Limbo is very similar in that it's a game that hangs most of its memorable hats on its art style, its sound design, and like it's like more of the decisions about what you're doing and what that all looks like than the actual like gameplay. Like
Yeah.
The gameplay of Lana and the gameplay of Limbo is like, you know, like dragging some boxes onto switches and stuff like that. But it's interesting right. that mm-hmm. they both managed to like way elevate beyond the actual play mm-hmm. into something that feels a lot more special just because every other piece is so like meticulous. So
it's kind of incredible with video games nowadays.
Yeah.
That exact thing. In the 80s, it was gameplay and that's it. Mm-hmm. That's all that matters. The graphics were there just so you could see what you were doing. Now we have developers making video games look and sound as good as they can. They just kind of like, yeah, the gameplay will be what it is. Everybody's going to play it for what it looks like.
Yep.
It's kind of a weird thing yeah. that's happened with video games lately.
It is strange. And I hear you, gameplay is king people out there. And I agree with you, but like, yeah, you know what? Too. Playing a game is the full experience of playing that game, inclusive of all the pieces and how they coalesce together. And Planet Alana coalesces is very interesting. Yep. So, my other, you know what, just quick shout-outs. These would not win over Planet Alana, but honorable mention. I do like Cocoon's vibe, its art direction, yep. specifically mm-hmm. the look and feel of, like, jumping in and out of those worlds and how, like, seamless mm-hmm. and smooth and cool it is. I think that was very well done. And it all, like, it's all just, like, one big, beautiful, unbroken world. A lot of interesting environments and things like that. I'd also give a shout-out to Chance of Sennar. It's got this sort of, like, Dreamcast era kind of cell shaded energy to it a little bit. Some of the animations are a little chonky in an enjoyable way, but like
yeah,
in general, it looks good. It's very striking. It uses like a lot of like primary colors. And when I say that, it's like this area's primary color is yellow. And then there are gradients off of yellow to accentuate detail. And then different areas of the game use different primary colors in that way. So it's an interesting use of color. But
yep.
I got to come in this time and give it to Sea of Stars. All right. Yeah. It's so okay. ridiculous and how good that pixel art looks. There's so much tiny detail in that game constantly, like little things moving around in the environment, little shrubs here that are just kind of gently moving. Just like you mentioned, the soundtrack, all the art is designed and looks good in day or nighttime. And
yes.
and looks good transitioning between the two in real time, which is a testament right. to its ridiculously good lighting engine, which is not something you would expect to say about a pixel art game.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also give a shout out to the animations. You know, you think of like Chrono Trigger being the obvious, you know, game to set next to Sea of Stars. Chrono Trigger and a lot of RPGs of that era, your characters had kind of like 10 to 15 reactions and they would like do the one that is most appropriate there. So yeah. you'd get like Chrono, you know, like looking shocked and putting his hands up and it's like, yeah, that's mostly the vibe, but maybe not exactly what a human would do in this situation. But Sea Stars has so many animations for every tiny little thing, you know, in and out of battle. They are constantly doing little things. So much so that like it's a pixel art game, but a character can be facing away from you and just sort of subtly moving. And you're like, I can tell that that character is determined or that that character is scared yeah. or that that character is,
yeah.
you know, any range of emotions from the tiniest choices that they made. And then the last thing, the real tipping point is that it's got the freaking 15 best seconds of art of the whole year clear and away.
Yeah.
I won't
yeah,
spoil anything definitely. For anyone, but like, there is a scene that is a transition that comes half-ish through the game that is so striking, it is so surprising, and it is so freaking gorgeous that
it's
unreal.
It's like Final Fantasy 16, those battles.
Yes.
You know, I've been playing that.
It is the icon battle of Sea of Stars for sure.
Yeah, it's a hype moment. Like, yeah. oh my God, I can't believe yep. this is happening.
And it
yeah,
comes kind of out of nowhere. Like, you know what you're doing is like, you know, a capital T thing, but like, there is no indication that it's just going to go, like, just rip into the craziest guitar solo you've ever heard in your life and then mm-hmm. go back. It's like, oh, my God. So, yeah.
It absolutely leaves you wanting more. And I think we talked about it in the spoiler section of our review of Sea of Stars. I remember Berger saying, like, is this what the game's going to be now?
I know.
Like, that's, I'm so like, this is awesome. And then, you know, it's like, ah, dang. And but you're happy the moment existed at all, I yes. guess, right? But yeah.
You're mm-hmm. like, you know, maybe 10 years from now, Sea of Stars 2, you know, maybe you yeah. revisit some of these ideas, guys.
Seriously.
So yeah, good, just like Soundtrack Man, good year for good art.
Yes, yes. I remember, I think it was in our group, I remember saying, you mentioned the sprite animation. Mm-hmm. At the very beginning of the game, it's like when you're in training with Zale and Valerie or whatever. I remember thinking, oh my God, look at Zale doing push-ups.
Yeah.
This is absolutely insane. How is that man doing? Like, it's like there's like 20 frames for these push-ups. It was the most realistic sprite-based push-ups I've ever seen in my life.
Yep.
So, yeah.
For sure.
Oh. What a game. This is a good game.
Seriously.
All right, it's my turn to introduce the category, I'm assuming, here.
Yeah.
I think so.
Kind of. It's an interesting one.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Okay, so this one was, it's called the host choice category. So what this category is, we each come up with our own special category this year, and then we assign a game to that category. So I'll do mine first for an example, or do you guys want to do yours first? Either way.
Yeah, I've got an idea of what I wanted mine to mean, so I can go.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're all still right. Going round robin, right? Or whatever.
So, I was thinking of what categories do we not have covered that I would really like to point out? And there are a few that we don't talk about. But for me, the thing that I really wanted to mention or drive home again in a category format is, initially I had it called Games That Made Me Feel. But best story is also a way that you could label this.
Nice.
So I have two, and I'm not giving an honorable mention this time. You guys are just gonna have to deal with it. I couldn't pick.
We'll be the tiebreaker. We'll choose which one of these you felt the most about.
If that's the case, then Josh is definitely going to win this tiebreaker, because the first one is A Space for the Unbound.
Damn it.
A Space for the Unbound.
You have one baby and you're gone for 5 months. And suddenly, all everyone talks about is A Space for the Unbound. God.
That, you had plenty of time to play this game, Steve. Like, I don't know. I don't want to even hear it. It should be a 2024 get around to it at some point game, yeah, I'll say.
Definitely.
Because Josh, I'm sure, can back me up on this one. The roller coaster you go on, it's just the mental gymnastics that you end up doing with A Space for the Unbound.
Yeah.
Between figuring out what the hell is even going on to then finally discovering what's going on and trying to hold back the tears from coming out of your eyes. And then, of course, the conclusion of that story is, heart-wrenching, to say the least.
Heart-wrenching. Yeah, it's, I would say, one of the more emotionally affecting stories this year. Like, I think about that story probably once a week, easily. It's so good.
Yeah. It is. The only knock I'll give it is it's a little long in the tooth. I think there's a little bit of padding. It didn't really need to be that long. But at the same time, every bit of that story makes sense and came together to deliver at the end. So that's my first choice. Second choice, you guys aren't going to actually be able to have input on, Meg's Monster. Incredible game. And honestly, yes, A Space for the Unbound is still a sprite-based game, but the animations are incredible. Meg's Monster doesn't have any of that. It is a 16-bit RPG adventure thing. It is Earthbound, but in 2023. But it has this story behind it where you just care so much about characters that you don't think you're going to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I don't want to say too much about Meg's Monster because it would spoil too much. And I will say, if anybody goes back and listens to my Meg's Monster review on IndieQuest, there are things that I absolutely omitted and left out, so it didn't ruin it for anybody. There's twists and turns that you do not see coming. Great story. Heart-wrenching in so many ways, multiple times. I think Steve or Josh, one of you said something about a Steam review you read where it's like, I thought I was going to cry at one moment, and then I actually ended up crying later when you realize what's happening. And it does that so well, kind of like the Kangal Freebird games in certain ways. So, yeah, those are my two games that made me feel / best stories of 2023.
Nice. Good choice for a category, too. Way to...
Yeah.
It's one of those where it's so good, I'm like, maybe we pencil that in as actually one of our official categories for next year, because it does feel like a bit of an omission.
It would be. I think it would be a good category. I think the only reason I thought maybe we don't do it... what if you dedicate a year to playing platformers and roguelikes? You're not going to have good stories generally. I mean, Hades is absolutely incredible, but you're not always going to have a great, profound story in all games that you play. But yeah, I mean, absolutely, I would be all down. I would just find a game that says that it's got a good story, and I would absolutely play at least one or two of them, right? So
I can get on my podium and, you know, debate the merits of the Super Meat Boy story versus the VVVVV story. Okay, I'll do it.
And then Celeste comes from behind and just suplexes both of them.
It's so true. All right, well, that was a very heartfelt, very genuine, very earnest category, which really makes mine seem quite a bit of a meh here. But I went more memey. Okay, I went a little more jokey with my category. In reality, I was joking around. I was watching a friend of mine play Chance of Sinar a couple of days ago, and they commented on this, and I offhandedly said they commented like that they liked the sound of the like wind blowing through some of the like stone structures in that game. And I just jokingly offhanded said like, yeah, man, 2023, good ass year for wind in games. And I was like, you know what? That's actually true. So my category is best wind, the best wind blowing sound.
Oh, that's funny.
Of any game.
That's amazing.
So our runner ups. We got Dredge, all right? You're out alone on that ocean in the middle of the night, and that breeze rolls in, those waves crashing. It's one of the only sounds you get before, you know, the paranoia takes over. Well done. Good wind.
Good wind.
Best soundtrack of the year? It's going to have best sound design of the year too, right? No. Runner-up, though, Jusant. You're climbing up on those high ledges. And the wind's whipping past you, okay? Especially some of the later areas. There's one area in particular late game that is very much focused on wind, where it's blowing all over the place, and it adds to the tension of climbing in an effective way. A game that you may disagree with, but is in fact an indie because it is self-published by Nintendo, Tears of the Kingdom, best wind blowing in a game as you're falling from those high sky islands. God. No, I'm kidding. Tears of the Kingdom doesn't count. Although it would count in a best wind category.
Jesus. I love this.
But my number one game, truly the best wind blowing through your hair, through your ears of any game I played this year, Laia's Horizon. Okay, this is a mobile game focused entirely on just gliding down a mountaintop. So a key focus of that is hearing that as you're shooting by. You hear it. Suddenly, you know, it kind of goes quiet as you weave into caves, and then you come out and catch another big gust of wind. Or, you know, there'll be an air jet, and you hit that, and you get a big whoosh and launch up into the air. It's a game that hangs itself on the joy of wind, and the sound's right there to match.
So it's a mobile game. Did you have headphones in when you were playing it to get to experience the maximum windage?
Yep. Yeah. Not always. I mean, the wind is good out of just the Samsung Galaxy S20 Plus speakers, but
nice.
It is also, you know, best experienced with headphones. So yeah, that's awesome. Laia's Horizon, the best wind sounds of 2023.
Honestly, sweet. I'm going to do, I know you guys didn't do this for me, but I'm going to do something. I'm not going to go into big whole thing about it, but I'm going to throw one of my games into your categories. I'm going to pick a game off the top of my head.
Oh, do it.
Best wind for me, and I can't explain it at all or else it would spoil everything, but best wind for me is Meg's Monster.
Nice.
That's all.
I don't want an explanation. When I play it, I'll let you know if I agree.
Yeah. And I hope you remember it when you do, and you'll be like, aha, there it is.
Nice.
All right. My category today is called What Does This Button Do? And it's my favorite game mechanic in a game this year.
Nice.
I thought that would be something simple to go through. I want to do one honorable mention. I will say the orbs in Cocoon.
Yeah.
It was just so fun to deal with, going inside the orbs, coming out, etc. The basic mechanic of the game. But my award this year for What Does This Button Do is the camera in Viewfinder and the Polaroids. I just thought it was just brilliant. I think that's why we all played the game, because we all saw the GIF of the guy taking the picture and making it a bridge, and you're like, oh wow, I gotta play that. Yep. And every time you do that in that game, it is just as cool as the first time you do it. So, and there's always like really fun like ways that you feel like you're breaking the game, and it's like part of the game itself. And I just wanted to give this game some flowers, because I think that really just was one of the most interesting and fun takes. I feel like they could have went a couple steps further with it personally, but I do think that it was just, I don't know how they made this game work. Like, it just works, yeah. And it's just so awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it looks... I need to get around to playing more games like Viewfinder and stuff like that, because I know it would be... I mean, it's Portal-esque, right? But I need to get to some more of that stuff. Maybe I'll play Viewfinder this next year. But yeah, that's a great choice for that category.
Yeah.
The thing I like about indie games... Go ahead.
No, that's the thing I like about indie games, though, is that they can do something weird like that that maybe you concept out, and then it becomes such a cool thing. So, yeah, I just wanted to give that a shout out.
Yeah, you could rename Viewfinder to "What Does This Button Do?" the game, and it would be perfectly appropriate, because it's just cool mechanic after cool mechanic.
All right, so my "What Does This Button Do?" game is going to be one I haven't talked about, actually. And I will say it infuriated me at times, but it is still a cool mechanic. And that was in Tsunabi. I did not bring Tsunabi to IndieQuest, but you have a grapple in Tsunabi, and that's certain games that have a grapple, you know, you're using your grapple, but you're also using other tools. Tsunabi is like grapple hook all the time. I mean, there are sections where you are constantly grappling through a stage. And it can be pretty frustrating and pretty tough at times, but still a very fun, and I would imagine speedrunners have a heyday with that game. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
there's my
good one. If I was going to throw mine in, I'd give it to Chance of Sinnar. It's a game that is one really good mechanical idea, which is you can guess and label runes and then see if you're right later on.
Yeah.
And the whole game is just creative ways of spinning on that. And it was probably my favorite mechanic in a game this year.
Awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. Is it? No, it's not. Oh, it is my turn.
Yeah.
I get to introduce this one. Oh, yikes. Okay. Folks at home that are listening to this, the best indie game released in 2023, as opinionated by each of the hosts on IndieQuest. So, we went through every game we played, and we had to pick the best one. As Steve said, some of the categories for me were harder than this one, but I definitely had a few front runners that were battling for this spot. But with that, I will throw it over to Steve to give his best indie game this year.
All right, I'll give my runners up. Because I did build my top 10 game of the year list, and would you believe it? There are many an indie game that pepper that list. Half of it is indie stuff. So I've mentioned it many times. I won't, you know, go too much into detail, but Jusant, a game that really, one, it's already my type of game, but then two, it's nice whenever you see something, you're like, I'm going to dig that. And then you play it and you dig it way more than you expected to. I think that it's rare that you play that type of game, sort of like a cinematic platformer, like a journey-like, and have it also have satisfying, like, mechanical complexity in the climbing. So Jusant is kind of like that. It's gorgeous. It's my soundtrack of the year. It's doing a lot. Chance of Sinnar, it's so my shit, you guys. This is so my type of thing. I almost made my host's choice category, because I just heard this term earlier this year for the first time. Metroidbrania. Have you guys heard this term before?
No.
Is a gated exploration game where the only thing holding you back is your own knowledge. Nothing like mechanically is holding you back.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
And, you know, I'm a Tunic pervert, you know, all that stuff. So Chance of Sinnar, very much my type of thing. And I had a really good time with that game. A game that hasn't gotten a shout-out anywhere else. You could maybe argue, this is one, if you're going to debate me about whether or not it's indie, I would let you. Humanity by Enhanced Games, folks did Tetris Effect. Really cool puzzle game that I had a lot of fun with this year. Also a real vibe. You could, if we slotted that into art direction, it would totally make sense. Last runner-up, Sea of Stars. We've given it many an honorable mention here, many an award here. It's just a great game. It's just a complete package, man. I almost made my Host Trace category separate from those other two, best game within a game, just so I could put Wheels up
as, that would be a good
as
one.
The number one choice.
Wheels.
I'm like, I don't even care if there's no runner-ups in that category because that's all I need. But yeah, Sea of Stars, a phenomenal evolution of, you know, mid-90s RPGs. But my game of the year, one that I don't think I've even brought to IndieQuest before, have I? So this is a completely fresh thing for IndieQuest listeners, was Daily Observer. Another game in Dreams. Mm-hmm. This is the follow-up from the same developer that did Lock. We've had 800 Pixel Gorilla on the show before, so you can go back and listen to that episode, hearing him talk all about developing Lock. This is his follow-up, very much in the spirit of Lock, but also doing its own thing, which is kind of exactly what you want a sequel to be. It is, the best way I can describe it is, like, imagine the cabin parts of Inscription, kind of escape roomy, but you check in and play it at 15 minutes a day, and that's all you can do. You can't beat the game in one big sitting. It's called Daily Observer because you're designed to check in and play it daily, right? Mm-hmm. So imagine combining the brain melding of an escape room with the, I don't know, habitual nature of Wordle. It's just such a cool idea. I've never seen any other game that does that, and to pull it off in such spectacular fashion and still have all of those, like, oh my god moments that you had in Lock, all of those, like, has he really been hiding that in plain sight this whole time, I'm such an idiot moments. So much cool stuff jam-packed into a game that takes place all within one small space pod. So, if anyone likes, you know, mystery adventure games, if anybody likes games like, you know, stuff like, you know, Fez, Tunic, these types of games that I am always singing the praises of, Outer Wilds, check out Daily Observer. It is very much cool. And it's just a shame that it's locked to Dreams where no one will ever see it or play it. Because, again, if this was a game that was released on Steam, it would have a couple hundred, if not a couple thousand positive reviews. I guarantee it. It's just so slick. So, yeah, my best indie, Daily Observer.
Yeah, I am so interested in playing it. I love Lock, which, you know, when we talked to the developer, that was such a cool opportunity. I knew he was coming out with this, and I've heard of it before, and it's just one of those things, like, do I want to just download Dreams for this? But you're making me want to. Like, I've heard you talk about it on your Game of the Year stream and things and stuff, but, you know, yeah. So it's definitely one I'm just gotta, like, throw it on a list and get to it.
Yeah, for sure. Also a great contender for Indiest Indie, because, again, it's just this just this dude releasing a project for free on, honestly, kind of a dying platform just for the love of getting his game out there, so...
Yeah, very, very bloody hell, I guess.
In that way. Exactly. Right.
Here you go.
Mm-hmm. Have it. Enjoy. Just,
unfortunately, he could have done the exact same thing as Bloody Hell did on Steam if he had an engine to do it and release it for free, and then you'd have 5,000 reviews, and you know that people like your game, you know?
Yep. Exactly.
I also want to mention that Steve has now brought games 2 years in a row that he did not talk about in IndieQuest first.
I don't even remember. What was my game of the year last year?
Tunic.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah.
That game rules.
Weirdly enough, too, Nick, we've talked about it's like Hollow Knight, where we've talked about it so much, but it is not on the quest log. Fortunately, Celeste is now, so that's good.
All right. Well, yeah, that's true. Again, you save your darlings, and a game becomes a darling, I instantly go into horde mode. Also, to be clear for folks out there, I knew that my own game of the year was Tunic, but I didn't know if I brought it as my indie game of the year or if I decided to mix it up.
Oh, yeah.
I remember my own favorite game from last year. Give me some credit, people.
Josh, what's your game of the year?
This one's hard, like always, every year. This year, I think it just had the biggest variety of games that I've probably played in indie field. Like, indie is like, I'm sitting here playing, like, JRPGs, you know, style games, and I don't know, just things I'm not really, like, usually playing. Like, I don't, that's really cool. So I do want to shout out Sea of Stars. It's not my game of the year, but I really loved this game. I just thought, you know, we've already talked about it a lot. We have a 2+ hour podcast talking about it. Plus, we talked about it a lot in this episode, so you guys know that we're big fans. So that's awesome. Another game I want to talk about that actually brought my tear ducts work a little bit, Venba. I think pretty much a perfect little game. I just want to give that a shout out. It was kind of like getting close to my game of the year. I just one game edged it out. I just thought it was a very affecting game. It made me feel so good and so sad and so good at the same time, which is the best type of game. And then I want to give another shout out to Cocoon. I just thought it was just a perfect game almost. It's like a beautiful package of a puzzle game. Never hold your hand too much, and it never makes you feel stupid. Just the perfect right down the lane, you know, just such a good time. But it goes down to this. My game of the year this year for myself is A Space for the Unbound. This game, I think the criticisms are correct that you were saying earlier, Seth, about like, you know, there's parts maybe they could have cut out or, you know, this could probably been trimmed here and there. But the story and just the way they talk about it and the way they have a mental health angle to everything, and just it's just a very beautiful game. I think that this one is my game of the year because I want to tell people, go play the game, listen to our podcast if you want to have a spoiler cast about it as well. But yeah, it was just a wonderful experience. So yeah, definitely, Steve, you need to get around to that eventually.
I will. Yeah, I'll get around to it for sure. And you know, I'm going to give just a direct shout out to someone because I think it's relevant to what you just said. I'm going to give a shout out to, if anybody knows, the YouTuber Jacob Geller. Great channel. You should go watch him. But he was in his game of the year. He said something that sort of like it like solidified a feeling I have about the way I talk about games and the way we talk about games a lot of times. You said that you understand the criticisms for Space for the Unbound, right? Like it's got some pacing issues or padding or whatever it might be. He said that there's two philosophies. You can either you start a game at 10 and then you take away points for every mistake or flaw or pacing issue or inconsistency or whatever. And that's how you end on your final score or feelings in a game. Or you start at 0 and you just add layers for everything you think that game did really freaking well, and it builds up to your ultimate experience, which I like more because I don't, a lot of times my favorite game is flawed. Like it has flaws. And this year in particular, a lot of my favorite games, even if I set indies aside for a second, Alan Wake 2, Final Fantasy 16, all my favorites all have big issues that I could point to, but it's like, I don't care. Like the good stuff is so freaking good that it breaks apart from all those like little concerns. So I think it's totally legit to have that game, even if you have some problems with it, to have it as your game of the year. And that's awesome. I was wondering if it was going to be this or Sea of Stars for you, dude.
Yeah. It's a very well said, by the way. And, I think that, that's pretty much, you said it perfectly for me. Like I don't think about the padding in this game. I think about those moments that captured my imagination, that made me feel something, that made me feel like I was transported into the character's shoes for a few minutes to experience their story, you know, things like that. That's what matters to me when I play games. That's why I love Final Fantasy 16. I'm sitting here loving that game lately.
Different podcast,
that's
what I'm playing right now,
obviously. I mean, like you said, like Spider-Man 2, that is my AAA game of the year this year, right? There are plenty of flaws with that game. I can sit there and list them out, but that's no fun. The game is just pure fun and imagination and joy, you know. I love that game. So for me, that's what I look for in indies, is something that I would never have the opportunity to play in a bigger space. So
nice.
Space for the Unbound. Awesome.
Heck yeah, man. Good stuff. Well said.
So speaking of A Space for the Unbound, that one makes my honorable mention.
Ooh.
And was very, very near to the top. And for all the reasons that Josh said, I think back on my playthrough of that game and the pacing and everything we just talked about. And Josh, I'm wondering if you would agree. There are certain sections where I maybe got lost because I was looking for unnecessary things, side questy type things that I didn't really need to do, and that hurts the pacing, but it's not the game's fault. I could have just done all the main quest stuff, not cared about achievements, and probably beaten the game in 7 hours, right? But I was walking around the town, and it's a very alive place. Depending on where you are at in the story, if you talk to someone and advance the story a smidge, just a little bit, and go and talk to almost every single person in the entire map in the entire place that you can walk to, they will all have something different to say and something to say about the events that are occurring around mm-hmm. town. That is what makes this game. Like, there are certain times where it's like, yeah, I can say that the pacing wasn't very good because I felt like there were a lot of kind of drawn out moments, but it's because the developers had this, they wanted it to be a world that you're living in for 10 hours. And that's why yeah. it's so good. You could, I got caught up in just wanting to hear what all my favorite characters had to say next. And of course I was hoping that maybe they had guidance on how I could find one of the stickers or gum wrapper things that we were trying to look for, right? Or one of the other side quests, or go pet a couple more cats. But I still wanted to hear what they said. And that was not a tie to an achievement, and that's not their fault. So, incredible game. Definitely deserves a second or third place spot on my game of the year for the indie game of the year. My other slot, which might come as a surprise. I wonder if what you think, you guys both think my game of the year is, but probably second place, Sea of Stars.
Whoa, I was going to make a joke about that, but I didn't want to set you up to have to admit that it was your game of the year. All right, I have a guess then about what I think your number one is going to be, but we'll see.
I'm wondering if, Steve, you will have guessed wrong. Maybe I'll have you guess before I say it. Sea of Stars, we've talked about it so much. Honestly, we've talked about both Sea of Stars and Space of the Unbound a lot.
Yeah.
We all three played Sea of Stars. Much of the reason I love Sea of Stars, not just outside of the gameplay and outside of the amazing music and amazing story beats and amazing to look at, is the fact that we played this game together and with Burger.
Yeah.
And we got to talk about it. And it's kind of like the To the Moon reviews for me and that series. I love those games, but I love them even more because I got to talk to my friends about them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Sea of Stars is special to me for that. And will always be. I will always associate Sea of Stars with you guys in our conversation. Yeah. So
same.
But yeah, that will lead me to my game of the year. Steve, do you want to take a guess before I say it?
I wouldn't be upset or surprised if it was Planet Alana or Bloody Hell. Well, that was from the previous year.
No, Bloody Hell's from this year.
Oh, yeah. But mm-hmm. I would guess Meg's Monster if I was gonna guess your goatee.
Yeah,
Meg's Monster that's what is I was, really good.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking maybe for you too, Meg's Monster.
I am sorry to disappoint you fellas. Meg's Monster is probably fourth. I probably could have talked about Meg's Monster in my honorable mentions. It is actually going to be, and I figured you probably wouldn't guess it because I haven't talked about it a lot on here, Cocoon.
Nice.
Love Cocoon.
I should have known this based so on much. When I was talking about it in my Game of the Year stream. But no, you sing its praises, please.
I honestly totally understand. This is going to be irrelevant to the rest of the conversation. But Steve and I were going back and forth because he did his Game of the Year stream and omitted Cocoon from his top 10. And I was like, what? You know? I just couldn't believe it because I personally think Cocoon's good. I know Josh thinks Cocoon's good, and I know a lot of people think Cocoon is an excellent game. It was mentioned in the GOTY Awards, like the actual GOTY Awards, several times, I think, right? And it won one of the categories. So Cocoon is an excellent game, but I understand where you're coming from, Steve, that it is a puzzle game that maybe isn't for super puzzle savvy gamers, if that makes sense. If you're used to playing a lot of different puzzle games, then maybe Cocoon is a little tame, or maybe you want something more out of it. But for me, a person who does not play a lot of those kinds of games, it was perfect because, like Josh said, it does all the things right where it leaves you on that hook for just long enough before you get frustrated and then you figure it out. It's like the most organic way I've ever played a game where it's like, I don't have to look up a guide for this. There's no reason to. Just look a little bit harder. And I'm sure I'm not trying to, anybody that's listening is like, oh, I looked up the guide for Cocoon. I'm certainly not shaming anybody if you had to look at a guide because it is a pretty weird, tough, experience. It's a game all about perspective and sort of like Viewfinder in a way, but in a different way where it's not first person. You just have to like look at what your like look at your surroundings. Think about how can this orb interact with this orb, and especially once the orb starts going into each other and playing that way, I need to take this orb. One of my favorite types of puzzles in Cocoon is, okay, I have this orb inside of this other orb, but I need to actually bring it out and put it inside this other orb. Mm-hmm. And how do I need to do that? Like, I know how to solve the puzzle. It's a matter of how do I actually get that to chain together to make it happen? And once you get to that, and there's always like a little sound effect that plays once you solve the puzzle, it's super subtle. It doesn't come out and tell you, other than the fact that basically you're like, oh, I think I solved the puzzle. Let me try to turn around. Oh, I can't go back. So yes, I obviously did something right because it locks you off. Once you figure it out, it's not going to let you go backwards. I could go on and on. Josh brought Cocoon to IndieQuest, and I was hoping one of us would. And I think anybody that wants more information about Cocoon, go back and listen to our conversation because I gave a lot of input on that in that episode. I love Cocoon. And I'll always remember it from this year as a fantastic experience. It was a game that I basically played in one sitting. I just couldn't stop playing it. I just wanted to get to the next part. I just wanted to see the next thing. So yeah, for all those reasons, Cocoon is my game of the year for 2023.
Nice.
Love it.
I mean, it does so much right. It's got such clever, I guess puzzle design is what I would refer to it as, but it guides you in very intelligent ways. It's very visually, very striking. The ending is very cool. I liked it. At least it's got this sort of weird cosmic thing going on. It's a cool game. I think it's totally deserving to be your indie pick here. I'm curious for the two of you, would your indie game of the year be your full on game of the year, or does a AAA game beat it out? To pull the curtain away from indie for a quick sec.
Well, I almost exclusively played indie games for 2023 came out this year.
Yeah.
Mostly because I have a lot of other stuff going on. It's like, you know, one of my favorite things about being on IndieQuest now is it pushes me to not only play more games, but play more games that are relevant to this podcast, right? And I have to stay on track, and it keeps me motivated to do that, and I love this show for that. So that's, but also kind of detracts from me playing recent stuff or AAA stuff or retro stuff at times, depending on what I've got going on. But I'm playing more games, and that's the point. That's a good thing.
Yeah,
I think I am about 30 hours into Octopath Traveler 2. And I think Octopath Traveler 2 would be my game of the year.
Nice. Overall. Okay.
Awesome.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. I love that game so much. I could talk a whole show about that game by itself, but yeah, it's great.
All right.
Yeah, for me, I think my game of the year is Spider-Man 2, like, just to be honest, but I think I would put Space for the Unbound second, probably, of the year, and then third I would put Diablo 4 because it was just an incredible co-op experience for me and my partner. So I think that really added to it too. Like, the game's pretty cool. Maybe it's not the deepest Diablo ever made, but as a co-op experience, it was just a blast. So that's my number three. If I was going to rank, you know, mix everything up together in a pot and do that. So
That's totally honestly legit. Yeah.
You jarred my memory, Josh. I haven't played enough of it to really give a solid opinion, but for that co-op experience alone, I love Super Mario Wonder. I kind of keep forgetting that I have played that game, and I've put a decent amount of time in. Yeah. I've actually played like several different save files, depending on who I'm playing with who hasn't played up to that point. So like, my stepson was at his dad's, but then he comes home during the week. So then we start a new game, and I'm playing with my wife, and I'm playing with a cooperative, all three of us at a time, or, you know, and just a different three rotating. Her brother comes over and we play. My son's here and we play. So I love Super Mario Wonder for the co-op stuff alone. It's very fun.
Nice.
Yeah. But Steve, what about you?
It is my, Daily Observer is my number one pick across everything. So I actually got curious. I went back and looked, not to be the one true IndieQuest member here, but the last 3 years, actually, well, this year and the previous two, indie games were my number one. Tunic last year, and then Chicory the year before that. So, yeah, it's usually an indie game is very high for me, but yeah, I'm always curious. I'm curious to know where you guys are at. So now I know I'm the only one that actually cares about indie games. So when it comes to this final category, I think I get two votes.
It would be tough for me to figure out, like, Cocoon. The experience I had in Cocoon certainly deserves a number one spot. So I'd have to really think about that.
Yeah.
And it's probably recency bias. I'm playing Octopath Traveler 2 every single day right now. Right. Mm-hmm. So, all right. And enjoying it. So
nice. Well, that's all of our categories then, folks. And a little get a little AAA peek behind the curtain. You know, we play some other stuff too. We're well-rounded individuals. That brings us to our final section here, I guess, which is what's the show's game of the year. So now we all have the opportunity to individually pick our choices for each category, but now it's consensus time, baby. Mm. Now the gloves come off. It's bare knuckle boxing. First one wins. So I would say let's land on one winner and a handful of runner-ups. I don't know how many runner-ups we need, but I'd give us at least a couple. But we're not gonna have nine runner-ups. So I'll just throw out, I think there's a handful of games that are in contention here. I don't know where you guys are at. You let me know if I feel like I'm missing anything big. I feel you could make a case for Cocoon. You could make a case for Planet of Lana. You could make a case for Sea of Stars. You could make a case for Space for the Unbound.
I'm trying to think. I've got my list pulled up. I'm trying to think. What are the other games that we each played or experienced at least some? And I think those four were the ones that were coming to my mind for the show. A Space for the Unbound is tough to pick since you have not experienced any of it, Steve. I don't know how you feel, Josh.
Yeah, I think that should be a runner-up.
Yeah.
Probably.
I think Josh and I mean, both of us talked about it for our GOTY list, and if Steve had played it, I would feel very comfortable putting it in the top spot and knowing his opinions, but it's tough for me to do that.
Should I push harder for it because it's my game of the year? You know, like, man, guys, come on, let's do it.
I mean, honestly,
I don't know that it's an instant disqualification that I haven't played it. I think a lot of it comes down to the passion that the two of you have for it over other games in the category, because I don't did we all play all of those other choices that I mentioned? Are there any others that are out there?
Josh has played. I didn't know that at this or until today. I didn't know you had been playing Planet of Lana, Josh. So
yeah, I played through it during my break here, so it's good.
Yep.
So I mean, that. What do you guys think about that one as game of the year? How are you feeling?
Go ahead, Steve.
It has runner-up energy to me personally.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I think so too, probably. But
like, it is a really cool game, and I'm glad that we've given it a lot of airtime because I feel like I haven't really seen or heard much discussion about it at all. So big kudos to Seth for bringing it and kind of like putting my eyes on it. But yeah, I think that other games on this list are probably a little more well-rounded in terms of like...
Right.
How well I think they do everything across all categories. Also, even that aside, I think there's just other stuff that I feel more strongly about. Planet of Lana is interesting because I really liked it, but like, I'm not in the mood to defend it. You know, like I'm like, yeah, it was like, it was good.
It's like, to me, if I brought it, I don't know if I would put it on main quest. Just being honest, like, whoa. I don't know. It's kind of like teetering for me at times. I don't know.
It's all right.
Yeah, I probably would still land on a main quest, but it would be in my head like, is this a side quest? You know, at different spots.
So, I think for me, Planet of Lana, that type of game, the Limbo-like, I have not played a lot of those. So that's a big part of that, I think. It was a new experience. The gameplay itself was a fairly new experience for me. So that was enjoyable to me enough on top of the great art style and the great music to make it a main quest. But I totally understand both of your guys' thoughts because you've played a lot of those games that are like that, right? So
yeah, like if you play Inside and then you play Planet Alana, you'd be like, oh, okay, this is, you know, very inspired for sure. Different, completely different art style, of course. But
Right. You know, honestly, though, I don't think you need to feel like you need to defend it too much. I think the reality of the quest log is that I bet over half of the games that get placed on the quest log, the hosts would have put it elsewhere. I feel like probably. we actually put it, we are actually in disagreement more than we are in agreement, but that's fine because it's not a democratic vote. The person who brings it gets to pick, so.
Right. And it's, at the end of the day, that's why we stress all the time, hey, these side quests might be main quests for you, right?
Yeah.
So they're all good games. That's why they're here. So go check them out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Josh, I'm curious to hear where you're at with Cocoon.
I think it's kind of like it's almost like hard to argue that it's not a perfect video game, really. Like if you think about it, come on, think about it. Like it's very intelligently designed where it's one thing leads to the next, and then Steve is just so exasperated over there. That's fine.
I love the fact that Josh is saying this because the way you started this, Josh, you had me like, oh, Josh is going to be like, I understand what you're saying, Steve. But you're like, I mean, it's kind of perfect, Steve.
I know. What the hell? You finish and then I'll tell you.
I mean, there's so many good games to talk about, right? But no, I have to lean a little more towards the captain on this one where it's a game that anybody, even if you're like, hey, me, I like Locke. I like games like that too, where it's super in-depth puzzles. I played some Chance of Sinar. I'm going to get back to it. It's a really incredible game. I agree. Like, I like that style of game too, but this has a perfect spot between the, oh my God, this super in-depth puzzle game to a puzzle game that's just in-depth enough that you can literally, I could give this controller to my mom and she can play this game and love it. You know, I think that it has that universal appeal. I don't know if it's Indie Quest Game of the Year consensus fodder. It's getting close because I don't know how Steve can throw his argument out, but like I do think that if you guys put it as game, if we decided together that was Game of the Year, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. You know?
So what? I will piggyback off of what Josh, the sentiments that Josh was making. Cocoon, like Josh said, and like Steve has mentioned before this episode and other places, is a really good puzzle game that isn't quite as puzzly as a lot of puzzle games, right? But like Josh said, I actually texted my sister, who plays, you know, Mario Party from time to time, plays Mario Kart and whatever platformers. She's not a gamer at all. She very rarely picks up a controller. I texted her and said, you should check out Cocoon because it is a game that kind of transcends gaming for me a little bit. Yeah. I think I could, like Josh said, I could recommend it to anybody. And if you know how to press A and move the joystick, you're going to be able to figure it out. And once you're in it, it's not so much a video game as it is an experience to me. So that is why, for me, it's my top game. Now, I'm not saying it should be the show's game of the year, but that's just, I agree with what Josh was saying, why it could deserve it. But
yeah,
that, Steve, that's I do know.
I like that. All right. Apparently, I missed the pre-show where everyone aligned on all of their decisions. All right. You two are just over here patting each other's back. Oh, yeah, Dust Door is so good. Oh, I love Cocoon so much. Oh, yet another category that we have the same choice for. Oh, it's so funny. It just keeps happening.
I mean, a shame. Shame you had to be a dad and we just talked about
it. I'm really feeling like the odd one out here. All right. I have this concept that I talk about my friends. I call the pit and the pedestal. It's a very like middle school thing where you have a dynamic of three friends. And always one of the friends gets elevated up by putting the third friend down. Like, you know, you form your little like favorites. And I'm getting pitted right now because you guys got each other up on the pedestal. Okay.
That's funny.
You're doing me dirty. No, oh my
God. This is completely unplanned. I will say.
Let me actually state my case on Cocoon because you'd think from the way we've talked about it that I think it's like a garbage game, which I really don't. I think like I forget. I don't track anything below 10 on my top 10, but I cut it somewhere between like 15 and 20. So you could say 17. So for context, like Jusant, a game that I have been endlessly praising this whole episode, is my number 10 game. So go 7 slots down and you get to Cocoon. It's not that far. I still think it's a really good game.
Mm-hmm.
My experience with Cocoon was mostly, you could say it was like my own fault, kind of. It was just a victim of circumstance. So I played Patrick's Parabox a month before I played Cocoon, which is a game that is doing something very similar. Like, they're both very similar in their like puzzle design about like recursive worlds within worlds. But Patrick's Parabox is like, it is a much more like hands-on like puzzle game that like wants to explore that in 100 different directions to the point where it's like way beyond the level of complexity that Cocoon ever gets to. So to me, it kind of felt like, you know, taking a bunch of practice swings with two bats, and then I stepped up to Cocoon and the weight of just one felt a little light in my hands. It was a little, it was throwing my swing off a little bit.
You went from fast pitch baseball to just like underhand soft.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
It's not perfectly easy to hit, but you know, it's a lot easier.
I think for a lot of people, I'm not saying this is the reason the two of you love this game. I think for a lot of people that like recursive world within worlds thing that Cocoon does was like a big like, whoa, I've never seen that in games before. And for me, I was like, oh, I just saw that a month ago. So what else you got?
Right.
But all that said, it's still freaking cool. And I love the little bug dude. And I think it's actually really cool that a game with that much creativity is entirely, like you said, a one button game. Like, you only ever press one button in the whole game, a joystick and a single button. You could play this on an Atari joystick. That's how, stripped down to its base elements it is. So I also like some of the, like, small things they do. I like how they, like, subtly clue you in when there is a secret nearby. And, yeah.
Yes, I love that.
It's,
I mean, we didn't mention, like you said, Steve, it is less a puzzler and more puzzle adventure. It's not a platformer, but it's kind of puzzle adventure. You're exploring multiple worlds, and that's a big part of Cocoon. And on top of that, something that a lot of puzzle games do not do is the boss fight stuff.
I really like the boss fight stuff a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. I love them. I love the boss fights. Like every time I would get to one, it's like a grand reveal. You get to a big door and it's all,
it gives the visual a shadow style. Of the Colossus.
Yes.
Yeah. Or something. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. I think we've went on and on about Cocoon. I think we have one more game that we really need to talk about here.
I feel like we're talking around it almost. Like it's the big elephant in the room here and standing next to us, right?
Yes.
And that is
Smushy Come Home. Zoo.
We went different directions. Me and Josh played Karma Zoo together.
Karma Zoo would be a good one for what does this button do? That's a cool mechanic.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, anyway, you're right. Anyway, Sea of Stars. Where do we want to start? I'll toss it over to Steve to start, and we'll do that round again. Let's go ahead and pitch your Sea of Stars.
I mean, it's good as hell, right? Like,
it is.
For a long time in my life, until I played Outer Wilds, I said that Chrono Trigger was my favorite game. And for a game to come out that basically in its marketing material says, we also said Chrono Trigger was our favorite game, so we just decided to make our own. It's a miracle that it ended up being as successful as it was. It has one of the banging soundtracks of the year. It is my best-looking game of the year. I think that the combat is very clever. It does a good job borrowing some ideas from things like Super Mario RPG to make it a little bit more interactive. I think it has a pretty good difficulty curve for at least most of the game, but you never really need to do much grinding. Wheels, like the best game within a game you're ever going to play.
Wheels
is so freaking good.
Could be its own game. Please.
Yeah, I know.
Give us that game.
Release that separately. I mean, it's gotten so much credit that I just saw in an interview that some of the folks that designed Chrono Trigger were talking about it, and they were basically like, yeah, good for them. They did a great job.
Yeah, that is awesome. About the best. Yeah, the best opinion of anybody that you can get.
Yeah, right. Awesome. So it's, yeah, I mean, I Sabotage is definitely right up there with like a Super Giant for me at this point, where it's like, I'm day one-ing every game. They don't miss.
Oh, yeah.
So it's, Yeah, Sea of Stars is really cool. I will say, I don't think it's perfect. Like, mm-hmm. it does have some a couple of issues. I think that it's got a pretty slow start.
Like the first, 10 hours or so? It's kind
of like 5 hours. Especially the first, two are pretty slow going. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then my other, if I'm going to really try to, take points away so that it doesn't get an A+, the other thing that I would say is that they just there's one or two too few skills that are spaced out just a little too far apart. So you're using the same spells for in some cases 5 or 6 hours before you finally get another ability.
Right.
That said, I never got sick of doing the Moonerang. So is that really that big of an issue? I probably not.
I would argue that I used Moonerang for Valerie, mm-hmm. more often than any other ability. Yeah. And by the end of the game, I was still doing it. And there is a variation of it, I will say, at the end of the game, too. And I was doing that every time. And I mean, I'm click, 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 click. I mean, I'm doing it every single time. I'm not I probably could just get to six and that would do enough damage. No, I want 60 if I can. So, yes, I will agree. I would say that, yes, the beginning of that game is a little slow, but the art and music carry it.
Yeah, that's true.
Where it's I don't really care. Yeah, I'm just I just love what I'm looking at right now. This is absolutely amazing. The game will get better and better as it goes, I'm sure, but this is incredible. Love that this exists. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say it has the thing where, the beginning of the story, the characters you're kind of these are kind of your stereotypical, prototypical hero journey, whatever. And then slowly, and then sometimes not so slowly, they'll just reveal something. You're like, oh my God, this adds to this, that's this. And I think by the end, it's just from the character standpoint and the story, just it kind of blew me away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's rare is the game where I feel all the characters end up being very good. But it's almost like the two main characters are the least interesting for a long time. The other characters that you meet are standouts. I mean, if my host choice category was best character of the year, I'd give it to Garl.
Oh, easily.
Yeah, Garl. He's my dude.
Yeah. The homie. Boy. The homie Garl's so good.
It's hilarious. That isn't something, I mean, we all think that Garl is a cool character, right? He's happy all the time, but I am in the Sea of Stars Reddit and subreddit, and I mean, it's half of the posts are just about Garl.
Yeah.
Everyone loves Garl. He's the real main character. Well-written character.
He is,
He's incredible.
Yeah, and he could have come across so he could have been a little too squeaky clean, he could have been a little too good boy. And he is 100% good boy all the time, but something about the way he's written and the way he comes across is very earnest and very believable and he's just very likable. You want to be friends with him.
Yes. Yes. You want Garl to come and help you cook at some point, right?
Yes.
He probably gives the best hugs. He gives both those big bear hugs. Yeah. You know, you just kind of get lost in the hug. Yeah. You know, that's what I want.
So true. Yeah. Oh, speaking of the characters, something else that I haven't mentioned about this game to this point that I really like. It's not the first RPG to do it, but I love when a turn-based RPG makes all of your characters relevant. So you don't end up picking, this is my party of three. I was swapping characters out in and out of the battle, every turn. Because you're matching the locks that the enemies are throwing up. And you want to have certain, elemental affinities or whatever it is. And so everyone got tons of airtime. And so that meant I got to build all my characters up equally. I cared about them all equally. And I never... Sometimes in an RPG, a turn-based RPG, you pick your party of three and then... some of the other characters that you maybe get later in the game or don't have as much story, almost sort of forget about them. They just tag along with you for kind of no reason. But here, all the main cast are very memorable and you're using them and rooting for all of them. So,
and you can free swap them at all times.
Yeah.
That's so many RPGs don't do that. You have to, I'm playing Octopath Traveler 2, as I've mentioned, you have to go to a tavern and swap your party out if that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
And I think the reason most developers do that is because they don't want to make the game too easy.
Yeah.
But Sea of Stars was made with that in mind. So you're almost shuffling naturally, and it feels right to do so. Like, you need to for certain battles.
Yeah.
To like you said, to defeat the locks, but, like, it made it so it was fun to have three people on screen at all times, but to always have six to accessible.
It's almost, functionally, it's like you have a party of six, and you just choose which three of them you want to attack that turn, which is really cool.
Yes. Yes, I love it. I love it so much. I think what we need to do with Sea of Stars is I need Josh to either defend or whatever Sea of Stars. Because I think in terms of games that we all play regularly, Steve and I are more known to play RPGs than you are, Josh. So in order for me to feel comfortable having Sea of Stars be our game of the year, I need to know, is it game of the year worthy?
Honest answers only.
Yes.
Honest answers. No people pleasing. It would be in a probably top five for me. Top 10, maybe. I haven't made an actual list. I probably should make an actual list, but I never
Please do.
Done that. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, it would be up there. I do think Space for the Inbound, like, spoke to me personally a little bit more. I thought, you know, it just hit me in the feels just the right way. But I think the package overall for Sea of Stars is kind of hard to deny that it's just an excellent experience, even though for me, I have my complaints with turn-based combat. I just find it gets a little droll after a while. That's just my opinion. You know, I know that a lot of people be like rolling their eyes at me, but that's fine. Even in this game, I found that from time to time, but I kept playing because the music, the presentation, the characters, the story, and everything. And yeah, I had a good time with it. I would not be sad if it was our game of the year.
Okay. I need to know that, because I think what it comes down to is the love that both Josh and I hold for Cocoon enough to lift it above how Steve feels about Cocoon versus the love that Steve and I feel about Sea of Stars versus the love that Josh has or doesn't have for Sea of Stars. I think it's really between those two games. I don't know how you guys feel.
I generally think that that's probably true, although I wouldn't want Space for the Unbound to be written out just because I haven't played it. Like, it can still be representative of the values of the show. I'm curious, just so I have a sense, not that this is like a mathematical decision, it's a gut decision, but Josh, Sea of Stars, Space for the Unbound, Cocoon, what's your 1-2-3 order?
For myself or just in general for this?
Just for yourself.
For myself, probably Space for the Inbound, Cocoon, then Sea of Stars, honestly.
All right.
If I was going to list mine, that would be it.
All right. Drachma, what's yours?
Cocoon, Sea of Stars, a Space for the Inbound, and there's nothing else there. Like, it's those three.
Like, it would be those three?
Out of all indies, yes, yes. It's those three.
Interesting.
That's where it's like, man, I have everything we're talking about right now, all three of those games that could potentially, and especially Unbound is questionable whether it could be or not because of the play of our hosts. But yeah, those are the three game, my three favorite games from this year.
Interesting. Man, we really are kind of, because mine would be Sea of Stars, Cocoon, and then obviously Space for the Inbound would be last because I haven't played it. Or it would be a DNF, right? I did not finish. Like, it's, I can't really speak to it. We are all over the place this year. Like, I felt like the back of my head going in felt like it's probably Sea of Stars. There's a little bit of a bias to an episode where we did a dedicated episode as a group together and talked about it.
No, for sure. For sure.
But I don't think any of those three. I would be happier to see Space for Unbound in the number one spot than Cocoon in the number one spot personally. But
then I think what it really comes down to is, Josh, is it okay for Sea of Stars? Because that's what it is.
He's
to
a people
me.
Pleaser. He's just gonna say yes.
I know. I know. Need.
Okay, let me be a little more less.
Get in my pleaser. Face.
Okay, so you're saying that you would prefer Cocoon over, or no, you prefer Space for the Inbound over Cocoon, and then Sea of Stars on top of that, or? Steve,
that's in the world where Sea of Stars is not the in a world where Sea of Stars is not our pick, and I had to choose between the other two. You two both have had a lot of passion about both Space for the Unbound and Cocoon, and you guys are pretty much in lockstep about your feelings on it generally.
Right.
I feel like I like what I've heard about Space for the Unbound more than what I liked about actually what I played in
your
Cocoon.
Experience.
Like I Cocoon. Get the sense that I get a pretty strong sense that after I play Space for the Unbound, I will like it more than Cocoon.
Yeah. So I agree with that sentiment too, Josh. And it's because the story in a Space for the Unbound, you'd have to be a heartless bastard to. I'm like sorry,
yeah,
you just would.
So good.
Like,
yeah.
To play through that and be like, yeah, that kind of sucked. Like, there's just no way. I don't know.
Okay. I want to throw something out. Cocoon as the third place. What do you think?
Thanks for shitting all over my game of the year, but
no, Seth, no, make an argument against it if you don't agree. That's my just me throwing something out there.
I will say that it was those three for me are really, really close. Mm. It was not easy for me to just be like, oh yeah, it's definitely Cocoon. It's just my feelings and experience with Cocoon at the time. I think back on that more. I wouldn't say more nostalgically because I'm nostalgic for all of them already, but I'm just like, it was a very different experience than I'm used to having with a game genre that I don't typically play. So I felt kind of trendy and cool, if I'm being honest, that I enjoyed Cocoon as much as I did. But those other two games were also deserving of the top spot and could be shuffled depending on my mood and depending on my thoughts and feelings on any given day. So they're really close for me. Yeah, I know.
We're at a crossroads, kind of, I feel like, on this one.
Okay. I will say you don't feel bad about not making Cocoon the show's game of the year. I totally get it.
Okay.
And honestly, I expected it not to be coming in. So.
Yeah, so I think that I do want to argue for Space for the Unbound. I think it's it has the bias, though. We did play it together as well.
Yeah,
if
we
you think
did.
About it. Yeah, so that's me and you played it together.
The two games we reviewed from this year are the two games that are in contention potentially for the number one game.
Yeah, so
that happened last year too, right? It was the same type of deal.
Well,
similar.
Tunic was our game of the year. We all played it and we discussed it. I'm trying to think if we played. We played the To the Moon games together.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I guess we did have like a dedicated episode about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, but still, yeah. I almost want to just give it to Sea of Stars to make it less interesting, be like, let's do it. But like, I love Space for the Unbound. I just think that it's pretty much one of my favorite narratives in indie games, and almost maybe it would make like a top list of my favorite narratives in video games. Like, I loved it that much. So it's like, it's a hard decision. It really is.
This is quickly devolving into a Steve Twitch stream. We're all just like, man, this is really tough. I don't know what to do here.
Not trying to bring my stressed forehead rubbing energy to our generally upbeat indie show.
This is certainly tougher than it was last year, and I think probably tougher than the year before when you guys. I don't remember what you named your game of the year.
Was that previous.
Hades? 2020. Hades is 2020.
2020.
In 2021, I think was hiatus time, so probably.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
No, we did.
Did we do Chicory?
I forgot what the game.
That was,
I think it was Chicory.
That was my game of the year, so yeah. I feel like this is the first time any of our game of the years have been, like, not a gimme. Like, I feel like in previous shows, it was always kind of like, let's be real, it's probably this, right? And it's like, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm kind of getting the sense at this point that Cocoon probably a runner-up. Right. Sea of Stars or Space for the Unbound the number one spot.
Yes.
I mean, you don't have to make the ultimate decision, but we got Josh in the corner for Space for the Unbound. I didn't play it, so I'm in the corner for Sea of Stars. Drock, my buddy, if you're tie breaking, what are you feeling?
Well, I agree with Josh like I do every single second of my life.
And I love to disagree with Steve. It's like my favorite thing.
Drock was going to walk off camera and then emerge into Frantic's camera. It turns out they were recording together in the room and I just didn't get the invite.
Hey, Steve.
That's a point on your shoulder.
if I'm being completely honest, it's so hard. It would be so hard for me to pick between these games. I think for me, I already said, right? Sea of Stars is my second game. I would have to give it to Sea of Stars.
Okay.
So I don't know that that makes it the game of the year for the show, but that's what I would choose out of those two.
All right. I can get down with that.
Okay. Sea of Stars. I'm locking it in.
You're locking it in?
Let's do it.
You're
locking it.
Okay. I'm glad that it was a fight, right? I'm glad.
Yeah.
Not between us, but between the games, right? That there was more than one that were where passions were high.
Like, honestly, if any of those win, I would have been like, that makes sense, you know, going into this. So
I do want to put an asterisk. I hope that in the future, Steve will play a Space Beyond.
100% I will. And don't think that I don't have FOMO this entire episode.
Regardless of whether it's brought to an episode or not, or any of that, just shares an opinion of a quick snippet so that we could maybe revisit this conversation, because that's where I feel kind of bad about making that game, because Steve's looked at screenshots and I don't want him to do anything else. He needs to experience it and go through it the way that Josh and I did. But I would be happy to revisit this conversation at a future date and be like, all right, Steve, now that you've played it, how do you feel?
Okay.
That type of
thing. I'll be happy to circle back and let you know my thoughts.
So I did look it up while we were talking. We did not do a 2021 Game of the Year. Oh. You were right.
Oh, okay.
It would have been Chicory. I think we can all agree with that.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
Well, Death's Door came out in 2021, Josh.
Oh.
Honorary mention, Death's Door. Let's do it.
You guys didn't play it back then, but if we're walking it back, come on now. Anyway.
I like that. You know, I do feel a little left out with Space for the End, but it's kind of hard because I liked there was a little bit of a satisfaction to being like on a hiatus while I had the kid and being able to listen as like a fan of IndieQuest instead of a host. It's one of the only times in my life I'll ever get to regularly listen to my own show, and you guys did a great job. But Space for the Unbound is the one episode that I couldn't listen to because I can't have anything. Like, I could have listened to the early parts, but I was like, I already know that they liked it, and I already know that I'm going to want to play it, so I'm just going to leave that one aside. So it's a little bit like knowing that you guys had a party and didn't invite me, where it's like I'm standing outside the house. I'm outside of your window with my radio. Come on now.
Yeah,
it's
you were invited, Steve. You just were preoccupied. That's not our fault. You were standing outside the house with a baby in your
blame,
arms.
No blame, but it is a shame. So, all right. So our shows, Game of the Year, IndieQuests 2023, Game of the Year, Sea of Stars, with runners up, Space for the Unbound, Cocoon, and Planet of Lana.
Excellent. Love it.
That's a solid list.
Perfect.
It's a solid list.
Yes.
Good year.
You cannot go. Yeah, you could not go wrong playing any of those games. Like, if you put on any of those on, you're going to have an amazing time.
Yeah. So.
Something they all share, without a doubt, is they are all gorgeous freaking games.
Yeah.
Like, they all look great.
That's so true.
Cocoon is arguable about soundtrack. It's kind of very gameplay dependent, but man, they all look good.
Yes.
It's a good year for art in general. Like, it's beautiful, you know? Yeah.
I will say, you know, thinking to these games here, I don't have like any hammered out gaming resolutions or anything, but I will say something I'm going to try to do more in 2024 is play some of the same stuff you guys are playing, because it's pretty clear based on this year's Game of the Year versus past ones that like when more than one of us have played a game, it just makes the whole thing much more interesting. So
last year we're like, oh yeah, well, we've all played Tunic. And Steve loved it. Yeah. So here we go.
Yeah.
That's.
I do think that, like, I mean, we'll probably do some review episodes next year, just focus on like a new game or two or whatever. But I would say if Silksong comes out next year, we probably should do that as an episode at some point.
We definitely.
I'll just throw that out there.
We definitely will.
If it's not
coming out next year, but we definitely will.
Yeah. If there is a actual release date at any point in the future, we'll have to do Hollow Knight prior.
Yeah,
because that is a very serious omission from the quest.
Yeah, and I have ideas for guests. There's probably an obvious guest that we could bring on for that one. Yeah, so Steve's favorite person.
I think I'm sick that day.
Hey, it'll be a higher quality episode. I know she's listening, so that's why I said that.
Oh, Savage.
Savage. All right.
All right.
Well,
take us out.
Before we do that, I do want to say thanks, everybody, for supporting and being here for the show this year. This is the biggest year for our show, so it's been awesome. Like, I've been having so much fun doing IndieQuest. So,
yeah.
Before I, it's good times. So, you can find the show at IndieQuestPod@gmail.com and send us emails, IndieQuestPod at, did I just say that twice, didn't I? IndieQuestPod on Twitter. And then you can send us emails, IndieQuestPod@gmail.com. Steve, where can they find you on the internet?
Everywhere, you know, Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, all is Blinkum. O-O-M-M like... I don't know. None of my games start with an M. Matrix Parabox. That's the best I got. I was really wanting to pull a game from one of my categories, but I just didn't have one.
Manet of Mana.
Manet of Mana. Minscription. I will say, of all the places, if you're curious for more Game of the Year stuff, the best place would be to go is, at this point, my YouTube channel, where I did a video about my 10 games of the year, including not just indie stuff. So you can see, if you want kind of a more well-rounded sense of my taste, that there you go. What about you, Drachma?
I will mention, before I mention myself, go check out the next Polykill, too, because you guys are going to be talking about GOTY stuff a final time, right? And yes. It doesn't just include 2023.
Yeah, we'll be
right?
talking about our best beats, which is basically what are the five best retro games, essentially, that we played that year. So it'll be a good time.
Yeah, and then you also were on Gaming in the Wild, just to throw that out there, too.
True, yes.
Which was really...
True.
Yeah. Yeah. Good times. Good listen there. I'm about a little over halfway. Good times.
Yeah. So. Great show. Not affiliated with the network at all, but I highly recommend everyone go check out the show Gaming in the Wild. And yes, John was kind enough to have me on to talk about my Game of the Year and his Discord's Game of the Year. And they're also a pretty indie-focused show. Not exclusively, but I would say that the tastes of that audience and ours probably overlap. Pretty strongly.
Awesome. Okay. I am at Captain Drachma on Twitter or X. And of course, in the Polymedia Discord, best place on the internet. Look up Patreon, Polymedia, and pick a tier and come and hang out with us in the Discord. Josh, where can they find you?
They can find me at Frantic Society on X and in the Discord constantly as well. You'll see me there. I do want to shout out one thing that you can do on Google is, since the name of the episode, name of the games are in every episode description. If you are curious about a conversation for an episode, it does work to just type in the name of a game like Sea of Stars. And then, well, that's probably a bad example because that's the name of the title. But like, if you want to hear me talk about Cocoon more, right, you can type in Cocoon IndieQuest into your browser and that episode will pop up.
That's awesome.
So it's pretty cool. It helps out trying to, find a... it's like, damn, I want to hear them talk about Planet of Lana. Type that in. It'll pop up for you. So just wanted to shout that out.
I will mention, along those lines, I looked up Sea of Stars not long ago in Google Podcasts and scrolled for not long and IndieQuest popped up.
Nice.
We were probably top 10, 15 podcasts that you could click on randomly when searching Sea of Stars, which is very cool.
And apparently a lot of you have, as Josh said, this has been a real good year for the podcast, a lot of new folks coming in, so we appreciate you all, and you hope you stick around and enjoy another good year of indies to come.
Bye.
Yeah, that was honestly perfect. That could not have gotten better. I was thinking, I was like, oh man, that's great, Steve, good job. We don't need to say anything.
Just cut it there. That's totally fun.